tonight, new devastation in Hawaii as an angry volcano has now destroyed dozens of homes.
I don't even know if my house is standing.
People being warned to get out now before it's too late. Also tonight, breaking news from President Trump and his critical decision to keep or kill the Iran deal. Melania's moment, the First Lady combating bullying on social media.
Let us teach our children the difference between right and wrong.
Critics pouncing as her husband so often uses social media to attack. An uproar after students are rushed, even pulled off stage while getting their diplomas. Why a major university is apologizing. Cocktails and calories and the new numbers coming to a menu near you. The question is, do you even want to know? And kicking off our road trip across America here in Portland, Oregon. Their unique solutions to combat a pair of nationwide epidemics. What other cities could learn from here?
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening from the banks of the Willamette River on a postcard perfect day in Portland, the first stop on our trip across America. Five cities in 5 days as we look at stories that impact hometowns across this country. We're going to get to that reporting shortly, but our lead story again tonight comes from Hawaii, where a state of emergency remains in place after a series of earth-shattering volcanic eruptions. Molten lava oozing into residential neighborhoods, destroying dozens of homes. With this disaster still unfolding tonight, it's unclear if the worst is still to come. NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer is on Hawaii's Big Island for us tonight.
Tonight on Hawaii's Big Island, peril in paradise. Fiery rivers of molten lava oozing through neighborhoods, shooting hundreds of feet into the air, and venting toxic gas. More than two dozen homes swallowed. Ray Carlson's house overrun by a curtain of fire.
The guy next door to me, there was lava covering his whole house. And the guy across the street, gone.
With fountains of lava, rock, and soot violently exploding out of control, over a 24-hour span, the earth rattled here nearly 500 times. The largest quake, a massive 6.9.
I don't even know if my house is standing.
Among the most active volcanoes in the world, Kilauea has erupted multiple times. Miles away, at least 10 massive cracks in the ground, fissures splitting open, releasing lava and toxic sulfur dioxide gas.
I remember telling myself, this may be the last time I come back.
When a fissure suddenly opened in Amber Makua Kane's neighborhood, her family lost everything.
My son asks, Mommy, can we go home?
With 1,800 forced to evacuate, the Leilani estates are in jeopardy.
Just watching everybody come out of there with all their things, and it's so sad. It's just so sad.
Tonight, Mother Nature in full control. Hell on earth for those in its path.
In a state of emergency with the National Guard now deployed here, it's unclear when those mandatory evacuations will be lifted. We do know that they expect new eruptions in the days and weeks ahead, so it's unclear when these mandatory evacuations will be lifted. Lester?
All right, Miguel, some of those pictures absolutely unreal. Thank you. To the White House now, and not the president, but instead it's the First Lady, Melania Trump, front and center today, stepping into the spotlight in rare extended remarks, unveiling her new initiative, which includes a focus on good behavior on social media. Something critics were quick to point out her husband doesn't always practice. NBC's Peter Alexander has that story.
From the First Lady from the bully pulpit, an empathetic pitch.
An awareness campaign dedicated to the most valuable and fragile among us, our children.
Melania Trump unveiling her official initiative, promoting healthy behavior among children, focusing on their well-being, opioid abuse, and positive social media habits.
Whether verbally or online, they must choose their words wisely and speak with respect and compassion.
Today's rare public appearance punctuating a passion project for Mrs. Trump, who's visited with children to champion kindness. The elephant in the room, in this case the Rose Garden, her husband, who's built a portfolio of online personal attacks. since declaring for president more than 450 Twitter insults, according to the New York Times, like cheating and crying and crazy.
Does the president accept any responsibility for American skepticism that the first lady from the White House would be speaking out against cyberbullying?
Sarah Sanders deflected, but when I pressed her,
I think the idea that you're trying to blame cyberbullying on the president is kind of ridiculous.
President Trump today offering only praise.
That was truly a beautiful and heartfelt speech. It's the way she feels.
The tone was so markedly different than her husband. I mean, she was talking about a commitment to kindness, about how hurtful online bullying is.
16 months in, the first lady looking to make a mark all her own. Peter Alexander, NBC News, the White House.
And from the first lady to the president, who made headlines late today, revealing his critical decision on the Iran deal is going to be announced tomorrow. At the same time, President Trump is also dealing with a storm surrounding his pick to lead the CIA and questions over her role in what critics say was torture. Our White House correspondent Kristen Welker has it all covered for us.
Tonight, is the deal dead? President Trump tweeting late today, "I will be announcing my decision on the Iran deal tomorrow, and it may be the biggest foreign policy test yet for a president who campaigned on a vow to rip up the deal, increasingly signaling he's now eyeing the exits."
It was a terrible deal. It should have never, ever been made.
The six-nation agreement, which includes the EU, required Iran to reduce its nuclear stockpiles and facilities in exchange for lifting most economic sanctions. The president argues the pact isn't tough enough at preventing Iran from advancing its nuclear and its missile programs. But proponents say it's the only way to keep Iran in check. Key global allies have been shuttling through the White House to apply pressure, including the leaders of France and Germany. And today, the British Foreign Secretary, also in D.C.
We've got to fix the flaws in the deal. But you've got to do that without just throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Foreign policy experts warn pulling out could be a violation of the agreement.
Iran will then be under no obligation to continue to live under its restrictions and will have created a crisis with our closest friends.
It's just one of the national security challenges the president is grappling with this week. His pick to lead the CIA, Gina Haspel, a 30-year CIA veteran, is facing deep skepticism ahead of her confirmation hearing. She ran a secret CIA prison in Thailand after 9/11, where a terror suspect was waterboarded, and later allowed the destruction of videotapes of enhanced interrogation sessions that a Senate report later called torture. Haspel was on Capitol Hill today, urgently looking for support, after threatening to withdraw last week, but then pressed to stay by the president himself.
Looking forward to Wednesday.
Also tonight, the president's new lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, has for the third time in less than a week contradicted the official line here, this time saying the Americans detained in North Korea will be released soon. The State Department insisting Giuliani speaks for himself. Lester.
All right, Kristen Welker, thank you. Another major headline for the Trump administration today, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced tough new immigration policies that will go into effect soon that will separate parents and children caught illegally crossing the border instead of detaining families together.
If you are smuggling a child, then we will prosecute you. And that child may be separated from you as required by law. They must follow our laws or not come here at all.
The Department of Homeland Security says some 700 children have already been separated from their parents since October. Let's turn now to the outrage over what happened at a graduation for the University of Florida. The school's president is now apologizing after some students were pushed from the stage during this weekend ceremony. It was all caught on video that has students accusing the university of racism. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez has the story.
It's supposed to be a moment you never forget, but for these University of Florida students, graduation went from a celebration to an insult.
I didn't expect that at all. I definitely felt dehumanized and very criminalized.
Nafisa Atta and Oliver Talusma say they were among the students rushed off stage this weekend during a UF commencement ceremony. As several students walked up to get their diplomas, they started dancing.
The interactions of the marshal were certainly racialized. Because we are Black Greek letter organizations, and those moves are symbolic and important to our organizations.
Though graduates of all races were rushed along, these students say minorities were more aggressively yanked off stage. The video has drawn outrage on social media.
This is really symptomatic of a larger problem of institutional racism that I've witnessed at UF over the last 4 years.
UF has not identified the faculty member, saying the incident is under review. The university's president declined an on-camera interview, but Sunday he apologized at another ceremony.
That we inappropriately physically rushed a number of students across the stage in one of our commencements. And I want to personally apologize for us doing that.
But these students say the president was on stage and did nothing.
It could have been minimized by the president simply just intervening and telling him to, you know, just take it down a notch.
A memorable moment for a reason they never expected. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News.
Late word tonight from Florida. George Zimmerman, the one-time neighborhood watch volunteer who was acquitted in the fatal shooting of teenager Trayvon Martin back in 2012, is in trouble with the law again. Authorities say Zimmerman threatened a private investigator who's working on a documentary about the Zimmerman-Trayvon Martin case. Court documents show the private investigator received dozens of phone calls, text messages, voicemails, and emails from Zimmerman. Those records also show that Zimmerman allegedly threatened to feed the investigator to an alligator. Zimmerman will be arraigned on May 30th on a charge of misdemeanor stalking. Back now here in Portland as we kick off our week across America. Like so many American cities, Portland has been deeply impacted by the opioid crisis. Nationwide, overdoses have risen 30% in 14 months, while here in Portland, deaths from fentanyl are tripling. The crisis has forced some new thinking here that in some cases has redefined the role of first responders.
Male subject sleeping in his car.
In Portland, a hidden world. We're on call with Clackamas County paramedics in a seemingly endless race to save lives. Nationwide, the opioid crisis is raging. The overdose death rate now the highest in U.S. history. Kim Zimmerman knew she could be next.
I had to choose the drugs.
Even over family.
Uh-huh.
She got help in a region that's now responding to the crisis in new and different ways. Paramedic Amy Jo Cook and her partner are the area's first community paramedics, not just showing up for emergencies.
This is our crisis line. It's 24 hours a day.
But following up with overdose patients even weeks later, like Jackie Robertson, whom she saved with a Narcan shot when he overdosed on heroin in February. But he is still struggling.
Even if they get care in the hospital, when they leave that, there's nowhere for them to go, no one to really reach out to.
In Portland, 183 people died last year from opioid overdoses. Now, first responders are helping connect patients to long-term treatment through recovery housing. At Central City Concern, 1,000 people in recovery receive peer counseling, job training, and a bed for a journey that can last several months to over a year. Dr. Rachel Solotaroff says those with shared housing are three times more likely to complete treatment.
Some people have lost everything. They had jobs, families, master's degrees.
But Kim Zimmerman couldn't break free.
I did things I never thought I would do.
After a car accident in 2009, Kim's doctor prescribed her an opioid for back pain. She knew the dangers of addiction, watching her own daughter struggle with it. But when her prescription ran out, she turned to OxyContin and later heroin.
How bad did it get?
I didn't even want to live. I mean, and I have kids and grandkids, and I got to that point, I just, you know, I felt I had so much guilt and shame.
Kim lost her job as a manager in the tech industry. It shattered her marriage. After her 12th arrest, sheriffs gave her a choice, jail or a recovery bed.
I saw my youngest daughter. She said if I was going to continue this way, that I couldn't be in her life anymore.
Now 16 months clean, she's applying for jobs and focused on the one thing that keeps her going, family.
What do you most want to look forward to?
Having a place where I can have these guys over and hang with them and be grandma. I'm looking forward to being grandma again.
Officials here say the recovery beds are working, but they will need more funding to expand the program. Still ahead here, how many calories are in your beer, wine, or cocktails? Restaurant chains nationwide now required to tell you, and the answer may be shocking. We'll be right back. Back now with a consumer alert and a change you might notice starting today at one of your favorite restaurants. New rules for chain restaurants that require calorie counts to be listed for all menu items, and that includes cocktails. Here's NBC's Kristen Dahlgren.
You may know how many calories are in your food, but what about in your cocktails?
Yeah, a nice beer. I'm sure it doesn't have a lot of calories in it.
Starting today, when you open up a menu at some restaurants, you'll know exactly how many calories you're consuming. The FDA now requiring all chain restaurants with 20 or more locations to post calorie counts on everything. Right there in black and white, a margarita has about 300 calories, a bottle of beer, around 150, a pina colada, more than 600.
I think the majority of my patients are really surprised to hear the impact that alcohol has on their waistline.
That includes busy mom Danielle Perrain, who enjoys a glass of wine to unwind.
So I just did 370 calories worth of wine. Like that's a lot. That's a meal.
Studies on whether people actually make better decisions when they see calorie counts have been mixed. But Kirkpatrick says it's a good first step.
Calories is a number. And if I were to take 100 calories of beer and put it next to 100 calories of broccoli, but one's a much better option for you.
She says there's no need to cut out alcohol completely. But for some people, their drink of choice may soon change. Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, Denver.
We're back in a moment from Portland with something the folks do here more than any other major American city. Will your city follow the same path? We'll be right back. Welcome back to Portland, where rush hour isn't quite like most American cities because a surprising amount of it is on two wheels. The traffic, that is. Portland defines the term bike friendly.
It might be the first thing you notice on a visit here. Portland loves bikes.
I bike everywhere. I bike to work. I bike to the grocery store.
The number one bike-friendly city in the U.S. 350 miles of bikeways. A stunning 7.2% of commuters bike to work. The rest of the country, just 0.5%.
I chose to bike just because it saves money and it's a little bit of exercise.
It's something I occasionally do in good weather. This is part of my route to the office.
Yep, that's how I roll.
And this weekend, I met up with a couple of Portland bike clubs.
Hi, Carol, nice to meet you.
Taking me to one of their favorite spots in this beautiful city.
It's just the fabric of who Portland is. You come here, and before you know it, you got a trailer. And
yeah, I mean, these are like SUVs. Yeah, yeah. These aren't bikes. Yeah.
Portlanders may sometimes get knocked for it.
Bike. Cars, man, why?
But they'll tell you they're the wave of the future.
If you go other places and you don't find what we have here, multi-use paths, bike lanes, there's really quite a bit to choose from.
It's a gorgeous way to see the city.
Yeah, I never get tired of this ride.
Now, there's a rumor that it occasionally rains around here, but I'm told that doesn't stop people from getting out of their bikes. We'll take a break when we come back. What do you see what they're cooking up here in Portland, how teens are helping other young people and inspiring America? Finally, tonight I want to tell you about a remarkable group of high school students I met here in Portland who are doing their part to address homelessness. But what started out as a program to cook meals for homeless young people became a life lesson that is inspiring America.
Yeah, let's have salad. You got desserts?
It's an assignment these Lincoln High students give themselves.
On desserts, we got Libby, Akili, and Jude.
One of the most important lessons they say they'll learn, arriving after school each week at a local church.
Wash your hands, guys.
To make a meal.
Hey, do you think we should put more onions in here?
3 years ago, Portland officials declared the city's homeless problem a state of emergency. And today it is still an issue here.
Hey, how you doing?
Nice to meet you, Alex.
Alex, good to see you.
We met up with the group and joined in.
What are you guys cooking today?
We are making some meatball subs.
As they chopped, diced, and prepared home-cooked meals.
All right, here we go.
These teens trying to make a difference for other young people who, in this case, have no place to call home.
Will you open it, McKean?
Serving close to 27,000 dinners since starting 2 years ago.
All right, where do you guys want the meatballs?
Outside in the dining room, it's clear this is much more than just a meal.
Blazers, the Blazers.
Oh,
the
point guard's 445.
Kyle Pillsbury lives on the street.
There's a lot of drama out there. This is kind of my one place a week that I can come and just relax. These kids are out here, and they actually come out and they talk with us, and they interact. It's nice. It's humanizing.
And that, these teens say, is the lesson they've learned, that something so small can have such a big payoff.
You're making some real personal connections.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and just sitting down with them, that's really what I look forward to.
This sort of shows you that there's a world beyond the little bubble that you live in. The only difference between you and this other person is that you have a bed and they don't. That's the only difference. And once you realize that, the world seems, it's different.
I think there's a life lesson in there for all of us. That's going to do it for Nightly News on a Monday night. I want to thank the great people of Portland, especially our partners at KGW for being such great hosts and welcoming here. Also say hi to some of our budding chefs here you saw in that story. I'm Lester Holt for all of us at NBC News. Thank you for watching and good night.